Okay, let us look at a few applications of the analysis of past spectral densities. And one of the applications I would like to show through synchronized averaging of heart sound signal spectra. We know that the PCG signal is non-stationary. The amount of blood in each cardiac chamber and the state of contraction of the muscles will change continually during each cycle. S2 usually has more high frequency content than S1 that we saw through previous studies, and the past spectral density of normal heart sound signals will change within about 300 milliseconds, maybe even less. So it's not as, it doesn't change as fast as a speech signal, but it does change in a matter of a few tens of milliseconds. There are some other transient signals, valve opening or closing sounds, and could be short of the order of 10 milliseconds. And these are transients with high frequency character. Murmurs add another dimension of non-stationarity, and these are random-like signals with noise-like signals, I should say, with frequency content beyond those of normal S1 and S2. The past spectral density of an abnormal heart sound signal could change in a matter of 100 milliseconds or less. Individual epochs of S1, S2, valve snaps and murmurs of limited duration could be of the order of 10 to 300 milliseconds. The reason I'm giving these numbers is to indicate that there are short intervals within which the characteristics could change, and this creates difficulties in applying the techniques that we have seen so far. You cannot perform segmented averaging such as Bartlett or Welch because the signal is non-stationary. Within a cardiac cycle, you have all of these things happening and the characteristics change in a matter of a few tens of milliseconds. So that method of averaging, or these two methods that we saw of averaging spectral density estimates, will not work. Also, the transmission characteristics of the chest wall will change with breathing. So the same S1 from one cycle at one phase of respiration will be different in another phase of respiration. The S1 itself will be different in spectral characteristics because the sound has been filtered by the layer of tissues between the heart and the outside recording surface, including the other thoracic structures in between. And the states of these structures differ with respiration. So the characteristics of the signals will change. Adult subjects may cooperate, I mentioned earlier, in PCG acquisition by holding the breath so you can avoid this artifact, or performing other maneuvers that are used in recording heart sound signals, but this is not possible, or it should be a not, not possible with infants and young children in poor health. So, the problem we want to consider is, how do you obtain an averaged past spectral density estimate of parts of the heart sound signal, suppose systolic and diastolic? The solution lies in the cyclostationarity of the PCG signal. I mentioned earlier that the PCG has several interesting characteristics, one of them being cyclostationarity, and this gives a unique possibility to average functions of PCG segments corresponding to the same phase of the cardiac cycle extracted from multiple beats. We assume that the same event will repeat. There could be minor variations from one beat to the next, but we may not be interested in those minor variations. Instead, we want to know what are the general characteristics of systolic sounds. So you observe systole over many cardiac cycles and average your measures over those observations. The non-stationarity of the signal within a cardiac cycle, then we need to segment phases of the PCG cycles. So there is non-stationarity within a cycle, which you address by segmenting adaptively into appropriate segments. You don't take fixed segments of 10 milliseconds or so. Instead, we can identify S1 and then S2. And within those, it is possible, but we haven't done so, it is possible to separate the murmurs too. So having broken a given cardiac cycle into phases, then you can observe multiple phases over multiple cardiac cycles. And then take averages of whatever it is that you are computing. And earlier we saw averages of envelopes and envelograms of heart sound signals, ECG signals. Now let's look at past spectral density estimates. So here is a PCG signal. You have seen this before, a normal signal with S1 and S2. And this was segmented using the ECG as a reference. I applied the Pan-Tomkins algorithm and cut the PCG cycle. And this is the systolic PSD. And here is the diastolic past spectral density. I also used the carotid pulse to identify the beginning of the second sound. And from first sound, or the QRS complex in the ECG, up to the dichrotic notch and hence S2, that is the systolic segment. And from the beginning of S2 to the next S1 is diastolic segment. They are not equal in duration. So here is the systolic past spectral density computed from one S1 and systolic segment. And this is the diastolic PSD computed for one diastolic segment including S2. As you can see, this appears to be quite noisy, and that is because of the variance in the estimate of the PSD. Now, in this signal, I had 16 cardiac cycles, and I'm referring to figure 4.27 where the segmentation is shown. The periodogram of these segments were averaged. The PSDs of this nature obtained from individual segments were then averaged, and this is the averaged systolic PSD, and this is the averaged diastolic PSD by taking 16 cardiac cycles. So now you can see that averaging over multiple cycles has removed this noise, the variability. In this particular example, there appears to be a gap here in the spectrum, indicating there is a null in the frequency or an anti-resonance. But that's not true. That goes away when you average over multiple observations. And this could be an artifact if it is seen in only one, but it appears consistently and is held in the averaging process. So perhaps that is a significant component. It's not clear to me what that is, but it's at minus 10 dB. So it is not very significant. So minor variations like this in a single computation of a past spectral density can be removed, smoothed, by averaging multiple observations or computations of the PSD, in this case using synchronized averaging with the ECG as the trigger to identify S1 or systole, and the carotid pulse as the trigger to identify diastole. So here is an example of a case with murmur. Here is the beginning of systole. This is S1, systolic murmur. This is a case of a patient with systolic murmur, split S2 and opening snap of the mitral valve. We have seen this before. And here, the systolic murmur creates a significant variation in the past spectral density of systole, which is this, of only one segment. When averaged over 26 cardiac cycles, the systolic past spectral density is this, which is smoother. And it extends to about 250 Hz, but this is at minus 20 dB. At minus 10 dB, the bandwidth is about 150 Hz. Diastolic PSD also shows variation here, some variability, which is artifactual because of the use of a single segment. It's a bit hard to see where exactly S2 begins, but that was done using the dichrotic notch. And this is the average of the diastolic PSD over 26 cardiac cycles, which is cleaner than that. And it goes only up to about 100 hertz at minus 10 dB. Okay? So, the power spectral densities can be averaged over multiple segments in this case, but the segments are always of the same cardiac phase, systole or diastole, obtained from several cardiac cycles. This is what the other researchers whose papers I mentioned earlier did also, but some of them used multiple cardiac cycles and some of them repeated the same cardiac cycle in putting the signal through analog filter banks. So you have to check that in the references and the details as to whether they average multiple cardiac cycles, but I showed examples earlier of both the envelopes and the spectral densities being averaged over several cardiac cycles. So this is an illustration of the same idea. Okay, now we have the power spectral density estimated using some technique. What do we do next? The power spectral density is a function of frequency. It has a large number of samples. Depending upon the size of the FFT array you use, you may have several hundred samples. You may not be able to use all of these samples directly in making a decision. You may have too large a number of samples or values in order to facilitate appropriate decision making either manually or through a pattern classification algorithm. You have to reduce the spectral density to a small number of measures. So let's look at a few measures that are derived from power spectral density functions that indicate important characteristics, not the value for every frequency, not 1,000 values. The PSD is a density function of signal amplitude of power versus frequency. It facilitates non-parametric and general spectrum analysis. But if you want to do parametric analysis and represent the entire spectrum using a small number of parameters, we have this problem. Derive parameters or measures from a Fourier spectrum or a PSD that can help in the characterization of the signal or the system or the spectral variations or the features contained within. So we would like to see what is important and how do we represent this important feature. It depends upon the application. You cannot have any general representation here. There are a few important observations that we can make regarding the characteristics of PSDs in general, power spectral densities in general, and then see what we can do with this information. First, PSD is a non-negative function. It's positive because it's a square, magnitude square of the Fourier transform. It is a density function. It represents the distribution of something against an axis, which is frequency. So we can treat this as a probability density function. However, the area under the power spectral density is not equal to 1. A probability density function is required to have area under the curve equal to 1. But you can normalize the power spectral density by its total energy. So we can treat the power spectral density as a PDF, as a probability density function. And then what? We can compute statistics using moments. These are not simply statistical measures, but they express certain characteristics of that density function. We can detect peaks corresponding to resonance. Peaks in the power spectral density indicate concentration of energy or power, and they relate to resonance frequencies of the system that cause the sound, if it is a sound signal. Measure their bandwidth or quality factor. How sharp is the peak? What is the bandwidth of each peak? Derive measures of concentration of power in specific frequency bands of interest or concern. So in some cases you may not want to look for any peak anywhere, but you may be interested in knowing only of the presence of significant power in a certain band. As we saw in the case of aortic stenosis, I forgot the name of those authors, they used 75 to 150 hertz. If you know from experience that increased power in a certain band is related to something abnormal, then the only question you want to ask is how much of the signal's total power is in this band. So you take the total integral, you take the integral of the power spectral density over that frequency band, divide by the total power of the signal. Or you can take some other reference. The power spectral density is non-parametric. It has values, it is quantitative, but it is not a parametric representation. We may derive several parameters that may represent the power spectral density in terms of its overall characteristics. You may not be able to generate or regenerate the power spectral density. That is not our interest. Of course, you could fit a model. If you know it looks like a Gaussian, it's unlikely. You don't have Gaussian distributions. It may look like a Laplacian. It may look like some identifiable distribution. Then you can fit that distribution to the power spectral density, and then the parameters of that function would give you a parametric representation of the entire power spectral density. Or you just compute some moments and some measures and indicate that the power spectral density has these characteristics. So the parameters that we derive may not completely represent the entire power spectral density, but may facilitate the characterization of physiological or pathological phenomena. All we want to know perhaps is there a murmur or not? How strong is the murmur? Is there beta rhythm or alpha rhythm? So moments of power spectral density functions may be computed. The first thing we need to address is the fact that the area under the PSD is not equal to 1. It's equal to the total energy or power of the signal. So you can normalize by dividing by this quantity Ex. So normalize all moments by the total power or energy, or normalize the PSD itself by dividing by the energy. And then the area under the curve is equal to 1. And the energy is the sum of the squared values of the signal, or sum of the magnitude squared values of the Fourier transform with the 1 over n factor, or integrated in this manner if you're dealing with continuous frequency. I made some changes, so please refer to the updates document on my website. I made some changes in notation. I have put Fn here in this section to indicate normalized frequency, and F in hertz to indicate frequency in hertz. There are some errors in the formulas given in the book for some of the moments, and in the updates document I have given modified definitions. The normalization factors were not correct. So I'll explain that now. So I changed F to Fn here to indicate that we are dealing with normalized frequency going 0 to 1. You multiply that with Fs and you get the frequency in hertz. So Fn is normalized, Fn equal to F over Fs. Now in all these expressions, we should use the spectral density function Sxx, omega or F. So replace magnitude square of x, omega or f, with Sxx. But in all the definitions of moments of the power spectral densities, Sxx is 1 over n xk square. So there is a 1 over n, an additional factor of 1 over n in the estimation of the power spectral density itself. So you have to take into account this factor 1 over n. Otherwise, the values that you get will be multiplied by n, the number of points in the FFT algorithm that you will use. So xk stands for the discrete Fourier transform or FFT of xn, and Sxx is the power spectral density of xn. A measure of concentration of signal power over its frequency range is indicated by the mean frequency, the first order moment. And here I have changed the notation a little bit. Fn bar, that's the mean frequency in normalized frequency, is 2 over the energy. You integrate from 0 to 0.5. You only go over one half of the spectrum because the other half is symmetric. The power spectral density is symmetric in frequency. So you integrate from 0 to 0.5, 0.5 being half the sampling frequency. The power spectral density is normalized by dividing by Ex, the energy of the signal. So the area under the curve is equal to 1. Actually, it is not division by Ex, but Ex, half of Ex, because we are only integrating over half the spectrum. So the 2 here comes from the fact that we are integrating on only half of the spectrum. So what you are taking here is treating this power spectral density as a probability density function. We are multiplying by frequency, the argument here, and integrating, which gives you the mean expectation of that F, which is integral of F multiplied with its probability density function. This is just a normalization factor. If you want in Hertz, then you multiply this by Fs and you have the 1 over n factor if you do it in DFT. So this is essentially the same formula now in discrete terms. SXXF is now replaced by SXXK. The frequency Fn is now K. The range of summation is half of n, K going 0 to n over 2. Now I'm writing it from 0. In MATLAB it will be from 1 to n over 2 plus 1. And then the normalization factor is Ex divided by 2, so you get the 2 there. And 1 over n is from the DFT. There's a normalization factor. And then the Fs is required to multiply the normalized frequency. So that gives you the mean frequency in Hertz. Mean frequency will indicate the distribution, the central point of the distribution of the probability density function or power spectral density function. Now we need to be a little careful here. It's not symmetric. I want to draw something symmetric. Power spectral density functions are symmetric in frequency for positive and negative frequency. So if you do the integration over the entire range of frequencies and it is arranged in this manner, then the mean will be at the center. Now that is not what we want. So we want the mean of only this part. So you compute the mean frequency only for half of the spectrum. All of these moments are for 1/2 of the spectrum for positive frequencies only. Now note also that if you're doing FFT based computation, in FFT, the second part will come here. This will be 0 and this will be n in DFT or FFT. So you cut here. You take only the first half of the FFT base spectrum because the second half is the same, conjugated or reflected. Now within that distribution, within the power spectral density from 0 to half the sampling frequency, you may also be interested in knowing what is the median frequency about which you have half the energy below and half the energy above that point. So the median frequency is defined as the frequency that splits the power spectral density in half, but not the entire spectral density, but half of the spectral density itself. So within this half, where is the point around across which you have half of the energy here and half of the energy there? So that you can check by summing the power spectral density that is normalized and integrate or sum it until you get half. And that the largest index F that satisfies this will be the point that you want. Higher order statistics, yeah.
I'm just wondering with the mean frequency, is there an easier way to calculate by multiplying with the frequency and divide it by the sum of the frequency? Like the weighted average.
Which one, the mean or median?
Median.
You could, you could integrate it and check where it crosses half. So that is what is being done here, right? This is. That's already here. E is the sum of this. E is the energy of the signal. So I'm normal. I didn't put it here. I put it outside. Is that what you asked for? Yeah, this is the normalization factor. The integral of SXX is here for the entire spectrum or signal. It doesn't matter where you do it. This is the total energy of the signal. Yeah? Okay. You may also compute higher order statistics that characterize the distribution. And we have seen the second moment, which is the variance. And that you compute by taking Fn minus Fn bar, the mean frequency, and you square that and multiply with the power spectral density, integrate, and this is a normalization factor. And this is the same. The integration is over half the range. That is, if you have normalized frequency in hertz, in K, using the DFT index, you would do it this way. And because the frequency is squared here, the scale factor is also squared. So this is a variance. How is the power spread around the mean frequency? So this gives that representation. You can get skewness in the same manner. Skewness is the third moment. Third moment FM3 normalized by the second moment FM2 raised to the power of 3 over 2. And this tells if the distribution about the mean is even or is symmetric or not. If it is not symmetric about the mean, then it tells you how asymmetric it is. And here you use F minus F bar to the power of 3. So you have two versions here, depending upon which type of frequency you use, the index in the FFT or normalized frequency. You typically would not need this, so you could look at only this version if you wish. The other one I'm giving just to indicate that it is an integral with a continuous probability density function. This is easier to interpret as a probability density function. This is what you would use with an FFT-based power spectral density function and the index K. Then we have the fourth moment, which is normalized, called kurtosis, where you take the fourth moment and divide by the second moment square. And for the fourth moment, you take k minus k bar to the power of 4. That's the normalized power spectral density function. And then you normalize it here with frequency. So these and kurtosis indicates if the spectrum is peaked or if it has a long tail. These measures can be used to characterize the entire spectrum and will not facilitate the recovery or the computation of the entire spectrum. It's not a parametric representation of the whole spectrum for all frequencies, but will give you a general idea with a few measurements, 4, 5, 6 measurements, that will help you in pattern classification experiments. So these measures that you compute, depending upon the application, could be useful in classifying signals based upon their power spectral density characteristics. The mean frequency is a measure of concentration of signal power. could indicate resonance frequency or unimodal distributions. Multiple resonant frequencies, then the mean frequency is not useful. If it is a general distribution without significant peaks and you want to know where the average distribution is, then you can use the mean. But if there are multiple resonance peaks, such as in voice speech, and you want to understand the form and structure of speech, then you would have to recognize each peak and get the corresponding peak frequencies, which is what is done in voice speech. So multimodal power spectral densities, then you have to search the power spectral density for every peak that is significant, get its frequency, get its bandwidth or the total fraction of power at that frequency. So you have to get measures of relative level bandwidth and quality factor of those peaks. The square root of FM2 is a measure of spectral spread, that is the variance. How is the spectrum spread or is it concentrated? Skewness will be zero if the power spectral density is symmetric about the mean frequency. It's unlikely. In practice, power spectral densities will not be symmetric about some other frequency. They'll be symmetric about DC, but not about the mean frequency of half of the spectrum. It's unlikely. But that's the characteristics, that's the property of skewness. Kurtosis indicates if the PST is a long-tailed function or if it is concentrated or has a peaked nature. The general statistics could be used to characterize spectral density functions, but you may also wish to use spectral power ratios in specific bands if there is evidence that there is a particular band of interest or significance in your application. So the total energy of a signal in a particular band F1 to F2 in frequency will be the integral of the power spectral density or squared magnitude Fourier transform from F1 to F2. Now, if you're only doing it on one side of the spectrum, then you have to normalize by dividing by Ex divided by 2, and then there is a 1 over n xk square, which is equal to the power spectral density. So you sum or integrate the power spectral density over the corresponding band and normalize, and that gives you the fraction of the total power of the signal in that band. And you may compute this for several bands of interest. I showed you this example earlier, I'll repeat. Johnson and others compared the integral of the magnitude spectrum of systolic murmurs due to aortic stenosis. They used the band 75 to 150 hertz to indicate the presence of murmur and 75 hertz as the reference. They did not use the entire energy. They only used this band to compare. And they called the higher band as the predictive area and the lower band as the constant area. We saw this earlier, so I won't show that example again. But the equation is something like this. Integral F2 to F3 and integral F1 to F2 and divide those two. I'll have to check. I'm pretty sure I got this from their paper. What does it say? Yeah, they used the magnitude spectrum. They did not use the power spectral density. So this is just magnitude. That's what they used. So if you want, I can take the square there. It'll give you a slightly different value. Binney and others used spectrum analysis of the EEG signal for the detection of epilepsy. Partitioning or banding of the EEG spectrum was done not only into the traditional delta, theta, alpha, and beta bands, but also they used these bands, 1 to 2, 2 to 4, 4 to 6, 6 to 8, 8 to 11, 11 to 14, and greater than 14 hertz. So the alpha band is not exactly covered here. Alpha is 8 to 13. They use 14 for some reason. So in that sense, if you allow alpha to be up to 14, alpha itself is split into two bands here. And delta, which is 0.5 to 4, is split into two bands. That's what they did. Additional features were also used, such as form factor that we saw this morning. And they studied 275 patients with suspected epilepsy, and 90% of the signals of patients with epilepsy was classified as abnormal using these features. So they got good accuracy. I'm missing some characters here. Okay. 86% of the patients with EEGs classified as abnormal had epilepsy. That's the predictive value of the method. So let's look at one other application. This work is from Montreal. Evaluation of prosthetic heart valves. Louis Gilles and others at the Clinical Research Institute of Montreal have worked on this topic for quite a few years and have developed a practical system, a phonocardiogram recording system that is coupled to a computer and a stethoscope system. So they have this, they developed an electronic stethoscope with a condenser microphone, and they have this interface to a computer where a master cardiologist or an expert cardiologist could get one electronic stethoscope connected in, and there are two or three outputs, two I believe, that a couple of other cardiologists or physicians or students could plug in their stethoscopes to listen, and they're also, the signals are also recorded onto the computer for further analysis. So they developed a condenser microphone system that is in the shape and form of a stethoscope. And their interest was in not the analysis of normal heart sounds, but the analysis of sounds related to prosthetic valves, and in particular bioprosthetic valves. When a valve is stenosed or is insufficient, it'll have to be replaced, and one could possibly insert a mechanical valve that is produced by machines and mechanical metallic parts or plastic parts, or it is possible to insert also bioprosthetic valves, typically valves from the hearts of pigs. They can be implanted into human beings. That's been done. Efficient opening and closing actions are important, as you know, and when native valves or natural valves fail, they may be replaced by mechanical or bioprosthetic valves. There are some problems. The technology has advanced, or surgical procedures, medical treatment has advanced to the stage that this is possible, but there are some difficulties with prosthetic valves that could fail suddenly. In fact, a company that was producing these valves went out of business because several cases of failure came up and they were sued, and they ran into serious financial problems. Mechanical failure could be sudden, and then there is a serious problem for the patient who has this mechanical valve that has stopped functioning, and then something needs to be done immediately. Bioprosthetic valves fail gradually. They are biological pieces of tissue, and they are susceptible to deposition of calcium, degeneration, and so on, similar to the original valve. Quite likely the patient will have the same problem that existed before that caused the stenosis, that is deposition of calcium or something. When the original valve is replaced by a porcine valve, a valve from a pig, that valve could also suffer the same fate over a few years of time. Dr. Dura and others have indicated through some studies that the bioprosthetic valves have a lifetime of about 7 to 12 years, after which, if the patient is still doing well and alive, that valve needs to be replaced with another valve. Follow-up of the health of the patients with bioprosthetic valves is an important issue. Can you predict when the valve that this patient has is likely to fail and when it will have to be replaced or when it should be replaced? You don't wait until the last moment, but you don't want to do it too early either, because that means extra surgical procedures and cost of replacing a valve that may still have some life left in it. So Dr. Dua and his colleagues developed signal processing techniques to analyze and assess the functional integrity of the valves. And this they proposed to do with signal processing techniques. So their problem is stated as deposition of calcium causes the normally pliant and elastic bioprosthetic valve, when it was implanted, to become stiff. So they wanted to propose a method to assess the functional integrity of the bioprosthetic valves and determine if and when they should be replaced. And their solution involved the supposition that increased stiffness of a valve is expected to lead to higher in its opening or closing sounds. That as a valve becomes stiff, the opening and closing sounds will be more obvious. And that is shown as higher frequency components in the first heart sound. So during those studies, they studied the spectra of S1 to evaluate sounds contributed by the closure of these bioprosthetic valves implanted in the mitral position. The normal S1 spectra will have limited bandwidth of about 100 hertz. We have seen that in some of the previous studies. They observed that in the case of degenerated bioprosthetic valves, there was significant energy in the band 100 to 250 hertz. So there was an increase in the bandwidth of the first heart sound. To characterize this increase in the frequency content, they proposed several measures. They computed the first and second dominant peak frequencies, the median frequency, the bandwidth and quality factor of the dominant peak, the integrated mean area above minus 20 dB in the power spectral density, the highest frequency at minus 3 dB, the total area and RMS value of the spectrum, the area RMS value in 20 to 100 hertz, 100 to 200, and 200 to 300 hertz bands. So they use three bands. So this is a large number of parameters. I didn't count how many, well, some 20 parameters, let's say, to represent the power spectral density. And obviously, if you want to detect these first and second dominant peaks and get the bandwidth and quality factor, the spectral density must be estimated well with some averaging to get clean spectral densities without artifactual peaks and valleys. So the methods we have discussed are essential in order to measure such features. And they got an accuracy, a normal valve versus degenerated valve classification accuracy of 98%. And they have observed many patients at various stages of degeneration of the valve and replacement of the valves. So here is the first heart sound spectra, S1, in the case of normal porcine valve in the mitral position. So most of the energy is up to 100 hertz only. This is relative amplitude. And this is after 140 months, a little less than 12 years. And here there is a clear shift to the higher frequency band, 100 to 200 hertz. So they used the features that I mentioned just now to analyze power spectral density functions of this nature and then make a decision as to whether the valve is good or not, and then when it should be replaced. I don't know when exactly, let me turn it around and say, I'm not sure what the parameters were that led to the decision to replace the valves, but that I suppose is done in consultation with the cardiac surgeons. I think that's the end here. Okay. So that concludes the discussion on frequency domain characterization of signals. Do you have any questions on what we have seen so far in this chapter? I went a little fast because most of you would have seen the Fourier transform many times over. I hope all of those properties are clear. Any questions about what we have seen earlier?